A few weeks back, I had the opportunity to speak, and at that point, I spoke on replacement theology and on covenant, and the covenant of God, and how the covenant of God, He never breaks His word. His covenant is always true. We may break it, but God never breaks His covenant. He never separates. So the covenant He made with Israel, He did not break. He did not say, "I'm throwing you away, and I'm going to make Christians as the new children of God." We're all children of God, and He has continued to bless Israel as well as the Christians. But I was wondering, now, I said that I had something that I would kind of follow up with that on. If we look at what did Paul say about it? Well, in Romans chapter 11, verse 1, they're speaking about this, and Paul says, "I say then, hath God cast away His people? God forbid, for also I am an Israelite, and the seed of Abraham, of the tribe of Benjamin." Now, we all know that to the Gentile, and eventually became known as Christians, that Paul is basically the father of it. He's the disciple that Jesus Himself handpicked to go out to the Gentiles and to bring the word of the gospel and the salvation through Christ. And He Himself is saying, heaven forbid that it should be, because that would mean he would lose his blessing of the Lord. But he continued to follow the laws. He continued to follow, but he knew he had the blessing of Christ. And that's why when he would speak to some of the different groups, he would encourage them on not having to follow all the laws and rules and everything of that the Jews had to follow. And but as we know, since the Jews did not accept Christ, they themselves still are under that law. They still have the 613 laws that they are following daily. It's a little difficult because a third of the laws, a little regression here. One third of the laws is how to act in the temple, and there is no temple, so they continue to do some of those on the Sabbaths. But it was interesting that what Paul does say about the connection between the Christian and the Jew. We're understanding that, you know, for many years, we've always said, "Oh, I'm better than the Jews because I got a better covenant. I'm better than." And Paul has kind of spoken to the Gentiles about that. And in Romans 11, 15, Paul says, "For if the castaway of them be the reconciling of the world, what shall the receiver of them be but life from the dead?" What he's saying here is there's Jews that are being cast out from the blessing and the covenant of Abraham. Even though they're doing works, there's still some separating that's going on here. And when we get into it, and I've done some research, and I have a really good rabbi friend that I talk to all the time, and it seems that the ones that they're talking about are not all the Jews are cast away so that the rest of the world can be blessed, but you had the Sadducees and the Pharisees. And the ones that were cast back and have been kind of broken off was the Sadducees. The Pharisees believed that the Messiah was coming, and that one day, when at the end of time, there would be the resurrection and there would be judgment. And everyone would wind up being judged by God. And But the Sadducees believed when you die, it's it. You're done. There is no judgment. God's not going to judge us. So there is no judgment, there's no resurrection, and there's not definitely not going to be any Messiah. They were broken from the covenant. That's the branch that was chopped off of the tree of God and the people of Israel, which makes it really interesting because in Romans 11, 16 and 17, he says, "For if the first fruit be holy..." Now, he's talking the first fruit. He's talking about Israel. Israel itself, the Jewish people being the first fruit. So if they are holy, then the lump is also holy. So they're talking about if it's the fruit is holy, the root down here, this has definitely got to be holy. Otherwise, you wouldn't have holy fruit. There would be rotted fruit that would be on the vines because the bottom would be non-holy. So he's saying that if they were holy, the lump would be holy. And if the root be holy, then the branch itself that the fruit is coming off of has to be holy as well. And if some of the branches be broken off, and thou bring the wild olive tree, were grafted in among them, and with them partake in the root of the fatness of the olive tree. Just a little regression here. He's talking about it being a wild olive branch being grafted into a tame olive branch. For those of you who don't really know what grafting is, you can take a branch from a tree and actually adhere it to another tree. So say you've got an apple tree and you take a pear branch and you graft that pear branch onto the tree. Now that pear branch is going to produce pears, even though it's getting its nourishment from the apple tree. So what he's talking about here is he's grafting us into the tree, which is the covenant of Abraham. The beginning, right back at the very beginning when God gave the covenant to Abraham. And so he's saying that if the root is solid and I graft in a branch that is wild, it's going to produce good fruit. And if you take wild olives and they are not very big, they are not very fruitful, you do not get a lot from them. And all throughout when the Old Testament would talk about the olive branch or the olives are one of the most important things to the people of Israel, to that area, because the olives will produce oil as well as food. You can eat the olive, but it also produces oil that is critical because it's oil for cooking, to be able to savor your meats with. It's also for the oil itself, for the lamps and burning of the lamps. You have to remember there was no electricity, was nothing there. So the olive was extremely important because that gave you your light. But not only that, it gave you the olive oil for the temple to keep the menorah burning 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You had this oil that would produce and was so critical that it was holy. And when it was brought into the temple, it was kept holy and sanctified. Actually, a little regression is where the Hanukkah is the festival of lights for the Jews. And what that is when the second temple was built, they did not have enough sanctified oil to burn the menorah long enough to be able to keep it going because the oil, they only had enough for one day, enough oil that it would burn for one day. And it took 7 days to purify and make certain that the oil was sanctified. And that oil and those menorahs burned for 8 days. Enough for one, and God made it burn for 8 days till the new was sanctified. So that's why when you see the Jews and they have the holidays of Hanukkah with the lights, and that they're lighting is signifying the blessing of God's power, that regardless of what is the natural doesn't mean anything, because God himself can do whatever he wants, and he just kept it burning because it was, they were honoring him, so why not continue to let it continue to burn? Now, funny thing with the, when you take a olive branch and you graft it onto another tree, it will produce olives. If you take a pear tree or an apple tree and you graft that onto the olive tree, do you know what you get? Olives. It will overtake the actual nature of that tree, will change. That branch will change and it will produce olives, not grapes, not anything, olives. It's the only tree known to be able to do that, because the root is what's strong. The beginning, the root of Israel, that covenant of Abraham that God made with him, knowing we'd be sitting here today talking about it. And it was there that God made that covenant with that root and that foundation. And by being grafted in to that and into that foundation, God is saying, okay, now you're part of my covenant. So when we're grafted in, we are part of the covenant of Abraham. Through Jesus, through what he did for us, and how he himself blessed us. When Jesus died, he didn't just die for the Jews, he died for everybody who would accept him. His blood is there still today. So it's interesting, though, and then he comes back, and a lot of times I've heard people say, I got a new covenant. Mine's better than the old. Ours is a better covenant. Who are those Jews? They ain't nothing compared. I've got the covenant of Jesus. I've got a better covenant. And to them, in 18, Paul says, boast not. The branches, boast not against the branches. If thou boast, thou branches not the root, but the root is for thee. So what you're doing is you're saying, what he's saying here is, the branch is not mightier than the root. The branch does not dictate to the root. Without the root, the branch does not exist. It will wither and die. If it's not getting its nourishment from the original covenant of Abraham, which when I say the nourishment from it, it's that covenant that God made, the initial covenant he made with Abraham. When he said, I will be your God and you will be my people. That is the foundation, that is the root. To this day, being grafted into that root, we're grafted into that promise. God has allowed us to be part of that promise through Jesus, through the sacrifice of Christ, that we would then be able to do that and be able to become part of it. So thou wilt say that the branches were broken off, and that I might be grafted in. Again, it wasn't all. And that's where the distinction has to come. Many people believe that it was all the branches. What he was saying here is all the branches of Israel were cut off, and so that we could be there and we have all our branches. And that's why you have all the different denominations. I've heard people say that. And it won't exist. It's not existing. God has not broken off, but has allowed again to be grafted into, to become part of the covenant of Abraham, which in part of that covenant, and as you go through all the prophecies on the Messiah, there's all these different prophecies given to the Jews that we are able to receive and we're able to get. And understanding that in actuality, Jesus fulfilled 101 of those prophecies. And the odds of fulfilling two of them or three of them are like a gazillion to one that any that this could happen. And Jesus fulfilled 101. And it's all the first coming where the Jews are waiting for the second, the coming to be the first, but they're not there. And then in 20 it says, well, because of unbelief, they were broken off. And thou standest by faith. I'm having a little trouble breathing right now. Be not high-minded, but fear. But if you're looking at what he's saying here is, yes, those branches were broken off because they did not believe in the full covenant of Abraham. They were not accepting that as part of that covenant, that one day the Messiah would come and that they would be freed and that they would be resurrected from the dead and that they would be judged. They didn't believe any of that. So that's why that part was cut off. And when it says, don't be high-minded, but fear, when the Bible talks about fear, it's not saying to be frightened of God. When they would say, if I were to say, I'm a God-fearing man, I'm not afraid of God. He's my Father. He's given me everything. I'm not afraid of him. So, but what I am doing, and in the Hebrew, it says to revere, to respect, to show him the glory that is his and his alone, to give him that reverence. So when we look at fear, we don't have to be afraid of God. We have to just love him fully and totally. So, but like I said, what we're grafted into is that root of Abraham, that foundation, and the importance of that foundation. It's our basis. And I know my son was wanting to go to Bible school, and he was looking, and he didn't like any of the schools that were around. So he started to really do some research and get in, and the Lord really had it on his heart to get back to the root of Christianity. And he got so into it, and he got his bachelor's degree, and then he went on to that same university, the Arkansas Institute of Holy Land Studies, and he got his master's degree as well in biblical history. And he was deep into the Old Testament and understanding the importance of the root and where we are with that. So I'm going to be closing here shortly. And as I said, it was going to be a little on the shorter side. Oh, thank you. Oh, that's better. But there's been so many times, though, that we will boast it. We want to feel arrogant that we're better. Sometimes we even want to say, okay, well, we're Pentecostals, so we got it together and nobody else does. Yeah. I think when we're standing in heaven, we're going to be surprised to see some Catholics there too. They won't expect us, but we'll be seeing them there along with all the other denominations, because it's not the how you perform your church services. It's what's in your heart, your relationship to the Lord, and the importance of accepting Christ for who he is. We as Pentecostals believe in the full gospel, and that's why we enjoy all the gifts that that God is still giving. He didn't stop giving it in the Old Testament. He's still giving it. So we still enjoy that. But it's interesting when I had talked to a friend of mine. He's one of my go-to people, shall I say. I've got my Jewish rabbi friend that I meet with all the time. And I had a pastor in Indiana that was a mentor of mine there, that he actually was Jewish, but he became a pastor, found the Lord at a young age when he was a wealthy and spoiled brat, driving Mercedes-Benz at 17 to school, and he had everything, and the Lord got a hold of him, and he completely changed everything. But what he has done since he had become a pastor, he is one of, if not the leading authority on biblical Greek. He teaches biblical Greek. He has seminar. He goes all over the world. I mean, he's been in Russia teaching it. He's been in China. He goes all over the world and teaches the biblical Greek. Well, I was asking him about the difference of the covenant. It's the same covenant, but our branch is a little different than the other branches, even though it's the same root. But what he explained to me was really good, because he said the covenant of Israel is based on the promise of the coming of the Messiah. So as we look at it, okay, they're waiting, and they're still waiting for the Messiah. So their covenant is based on, and has been, and from the time of Abraham, that covenant had been based on, and has been based on, the fact that the Messiah is coming. But we have a covenant based on the fact that the Messiah has already arrived. That's the difference. We're drawing from the history, from the root. But we understand, and part of that is because of those branches being broke, that we were able to be grafted in to really understand it. But we understand that the Messiah already came. And our covenant with God is not based on when the Messiah comes, because he's already come. And sorry about that. And their covenant is based on fruit regarding the coming of the Messiah. And of course, their faith is based again, and their fruit is based on works. How good did I follow the Torah? How good did I follow the laws? Did I not work on the Sabbath? Did I honor the Lord? Did I follow the laws that God gave to Israel, the 613 laws, which are actually a breakdown of the Ten Commandments? So if anybody has a problem with the 613 laws, which one of the Ten Commandments don't you like? That's all. I like them all. So they're just a breakdown of that. But our covenant is based on faith regarding the Messiah having already come. Ours is not based on, I have to do this. I have to tithe right. I have to be in church on Sunday. I've got to do this, and I can't drink. I can't swear. No, it's not based on that. It's based on the faith of knowing that Jesus already came and died for our sins. And we are therefore forgiven already. The Jews will wait for one day a year for the Day of Atonement. So they, you know, they will have Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, and it's one day a year that they will atone for. I got to regress with this. My wife says, oh, not again. But Israel had the Day of Atonement was always at the temple. And what they would do is they would hang a scarlet cloth from the highest point of the temple, and it would be red. This scarlet-colored cloth would hang there. And then they would take two goats. And the first goat, they would take, and they would just sacrifice it at the temple. The second goat, they would chase. And it would get away, and it would run. And they would chase it till it went over the cliff. The term scapegoat comes from that. That's the one that escaped. And when it would go over the cliff, all of Israel would stand and watch at the temple. And they would literally see the scarf turn from scarlet to white. And they knew God forgave their sins. But they ran into a problem. And it was basically about 70 years before the destruction of the temple. They lost favor with God. And they went through and they sacrificed and they continued to do their sacrifice and chase the scapegoat, but it wouldn't change color anymore. It stopped. It completely stopped changing color. Of course, that was right after Jesus ascended into heaven. So the scapegoat was no longer necessary because he left. He went back to heaven to be with the Father to get ready to come back again. He was our scapegoat. They still believe it's got to turn. It's got to be that Day of Atonement. Our atonement is already done. Everything that I'm going to do in my entire life is already atoned for. But the other thing is that ours is based on him already coming. But what goes with that covenant is works. God does not say, all right, you are my child, you are blessed, you are there, we'll do what you want. No, I need you to be working for me. He didn't say, don't spread the gospel, don't tell it. No, get out there and start doing it. Spread the gospel. Give everything back to God. He gave it all to us. And he wants us to continue to do good works for him in his name. In the name of Jesus, we do these good works. We don't say, well, I don't have to do works anymore. Well, you may not have to follow to the letter the 613 laws, but we still have to do the work of God. We have to give it. There is a man sitting here with us, and I'm going to close here in just a second, but there is a man sitting here in this sanctuary with us that is the prime example of giving and the works of God and giving everything back to God. And Peter, I applaud you. Peter is our missionary to the world. He used to be just China, but he took on the whole world. Anywhere there's a need, Peter is there. He's home here temporarily, just taking care of some issues that he has to take care of health-wise, and he will be back out and bringing thousands more to the Lord. He's church after church established, and orphanages, and you name it. Peter is there to spread the gospel. That's what God's talking about. We should be doing works. To sit back and say, I don't have to do it because I'm saved. Yeah, we're saved. But when we stand there before the Lord and we're looking and God is looking at us and Jesus is saying to the Father, yeah, I saved him. But go ahead. He didn't do anything. That mansion, many mansions. You got a cardboard box over here because you didn't want to do anything. And you got a paper crown to go with it because you didn't want to do anything. Instead of saying, enter my good and faithful servant. Look what you've done for me. So it's important that we understand that we're under a joint covenant. Our covenant is not separate from the covenant of Abraham. We are, when we say grafted in legal terms, it would be an addendum to the contract. He allowed us to enter in through the blood of Christ that we weren't entitled to. But Jesus, through his blood, gave us that opportunity to again be there and be one with him and still have that solid root. Don't forsake the root, church. And part of that is that Old Testament is fantastic to read and dig into and get really deep and heavy into. And there's a lot of Jewish sources out there that can really help get into it, the Babylonian Talmuds, and it's just, there's tremendous amount of information that the Jews have available that can help us to understand that root, which that root points constantly to Jesus, to our Lord and Savior, and the fact that he will come again. We know because he said he was coming back. If he didn't say, I'm coming back, then we wouldn't know it. But he told us, I'm coming back. The Jews will be astonished to realize they missed the first coming, but they'll be there with their knees bowed for the second. So we're looking forward to that.